Hello, this is Priscilla Morris, and I am the author of Black Butterflies.
In Priscilla Morris's debut novel, Black Butterflies, a Bosnian woman becomes trapped in Sarajevo during the siege of the city in 1992. Zora, an artist, wife, mother, and grandmother, witnesses the sudden changes throughout her home city, including destruction and civilian casualties, but also the support of her community and the power of art. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Priscilla Morris. Could you give our listeners a description of this book?
Sure. It's set in Sarajevo, Bosnia, in 1992, and it follows the story of Zora, who's an artist and teacher, who gets caught up in the war, unawares. We start with her floundering at the midpoint of her life. She never seems to have any time left over for herself to do what she wants to do, which is her art. And there's an incident at the very beginning with some intruders who break into her mother's flat. And it's the first sort of taste that things are turning upside down. It all gets a bit surreal. They won't leave. The police won't move them. So there's this uneasy, it's the first sign of trouble around the corner, basically. But they go on. Zora ends up sending her husband and elderly mother to safety in England, where their daughter lives, not realizing that war is about to break out. And so what happens is Zora is alone. She's trapped in Sarajevo as it comes under siege from the Bosnian Serb forces. And we follow her throughout Black Butterflies through the first sort of 10 months of what turned out to be an almost 4-year siege of the city. We're with her as the electricity is cut, the water is cut, food is very limited. And throughout, she continues to produce art. Art is her sort of the thing that keeps her going. She continues to teach art to her students. And she starts forming very close friendships with the neighbors who live close by in her tower block.
Early on in the book, Zora is telling her mother about the conflict among the Serbs, Muslims, and Croats. And here's a quote. "The Serbs," her mother said, raising her voice, "are you out of your mind?" And although she had tried to explain, her mother hadn't understood at all. And the more Zora had talked, the more she realized she had no idea why this war was happening either. Why was her mother so surprised about the conflict? And what should readers know about this war?
Well, I'm glad you picked that quote. People were completely, most people, I would say, were completely blindsided by the conflict. Their president was assuring everyone that there would be no war. Essentially, what do readers need to know is that Yugoslavia was breaking up at this point. So Yugoslavia, communist country in Southeast Europe, made up of six republics, and already Slovenia and Croatia had declared independence and left, and Bosnia declared independence, and a war broke out, as it also did in Croatia. The issue, why it was so particularly bloody in Bosnia, was because the three constituent groups that make up Bosnia, the Bosniaks, Bosnian Muslims, who are of the Muslim tradition, the Serbs, who are of Orthodox background, and the Croats, who are of Catholic background, none of them made a clear majority. So there was no group of people who were over 50% of the population. And the Bosnian Serbs wanted to remain part of Yugoslavia, basically, most of them, not all of them. Whereas the Croats and the Bosniaks wanted to separate and declare independence. And so fighting broke out. And it was particularly bloody. The term ethnic cleansing was coined during this war. And it was shocking. It was the, you know, this was happening in Europe at the end of the 20th century. No one really saw it in particular because Bosnia and Sarajevo, its capital, had been famed for their traditions of coexistence, of people living of different faiths, living peaceably side by side. My own family, my mother is from Sarajevo, I should point out, despite this very English accent and my very English name, so it can be a bit confusing, but my mother is from Sarajevo, my father is English. And my mother's family is a mix of Bosnian Serbs, Bosniaks, and less usually in Bosnia, Slovenes. This was completely normal back then in the 1990s. I think one in three marriages in Sarajevo were mixed. And so that's why people just didn't see it coming. They didn't understand. There was this pride in Sarajevo. Just 8 years earlier, it had hosted the Olympics, the Winter Olympics. And there was this pride of hospitality, tolerance, friendliness. Most people didn't believe that war was about to break out. So it really did blindside people. As to your other question, how much do readers need to know? I think readers can entirely read it without knowing that much about it, because the real story here is about what happens to a woman when your life is upended by war. A woman who loves art, who is very human. She's neither a hero nor, but she has her heroic moments, and how she confronts the war on her doorstep by herself. So, on that level, you can entirely read it without knowing or getting bogged down in all the very complicated details. But at the same time, of course, I would very much hope that it would prick people's interest, especially if they don't know much about it, to go online and find out more about this war.
So as you mentioned, Zora is a painter and an art teacher, and even at some of the worst moments in the war, she's dedicated to her students and to continuing her art. And her neighbor, Mirsad, is a bookstore owner and is dedicated to telling, documenting, and continuing stories. Talk to me about the power of art during conflict, whether it be painting or storytelling or putting on a makeshift art exhibition.
Yes. So all these things happen in Black Butterflies, and it's absolutely the key theme for me, really, was about the power of art during wartime and afterwards to help you. Art is resistance. I'd like to talk about two things in relation to this. One is the inspiration of this novel. The key inspiration for me was my great uncle, who was a landscape painter in Sarajevo, and he had his studio above the National Library that was shelled, and there was an enormous catastrophic fire in August of 1992 that destroyed the National Library and my great uncle's studio. He lost his life's work, over 300 paintings, and he thought he would never paint again. He was 68 at the time. But eventually, he managed to escape Sarajevo on the last Red Cross convoy out of the city to England, where his daughter lived. And after a period of recovery, he reconnected with the beautiful landscapes around him. He was in Wiltshire in England and started painting. And he went on to paint for the last 2 decades of his life, being really quite prolific. His story for me was incredibly inspiring because it showed me a way in which art can help you overcome some of the tragedy of war. It helped him to integrate into a new country, into the UK, at such a late age in his life, and to find pleasure in life again. His story was sort of directly contrasted with that of my grandfather, who my father rescued from the siege of Sarajevo 10 months into the conflict. And he sadly never really recovered from the war and died a few years later. And hearing my great uncle's story was basically the catalyst for writing this book, because I heard it at my grandfather's funeral. And I just thought, yes, this is something positive to hold on to. I want to write about how art can help people in situations of conflict. And it was also a way in for me to explore this very traumatic war that turned most of my mother's relatives into refugees. I do write about it a lot in the book, There are scenes, as you just mentioned, of both storytelling. So it's not just about visual art. Mirsad, the book store owner, who is Zora's neighbor, and who's a very lovely, kind man, very helpful, and they become very close friends. He also writes stories. He rewrites the sort of folk tales from the Balkans. And in winter, he sits in a shelled room, living room. They're all huddled around a stove. There's no electricity, there's no heating. So they're sort of burning whatever they can, bits of furniture. There's no TV, there's no entertainment. All the neighbors are huddled there, and he starts telling one of these stories. And it's a way of passing the time, of occupying yourself, and of using art as a form of resistance to keep your morale up, etc. And Zora as well puts on an art exhibition in her shelled tower block, candlelit. These are very beautiful scenes to write in comparison to the more harrowing scenes. And I hope readers will find the beauty in them. And they are absolutely based and inspired by real life. The people of Sarajevo were kind of extraordinary, especially in the second year of the siege. Artistic production flourished, and there were lots of candlelit art exhibitions. Plays were put on in shelled theatres. Famously, the cellist of Sarajevo, Vedran Smilovic, played the cello in the ruins of the library. And people really did draw on their creativity and whatever art they could to help them through the siege.
You loaned your great uncle's story to Zora in the fact that she had a her studio was in, above the library. Do you want to talk about the title, Black Butterflies? Because I do feel like the cover kind of hints at it. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yep, as you said, I liked that. I loaned my great uncle's story to Zora. That's exactly what I did. And he also gave me his blessing because I interviewed him in depth about his story. And I told him rather timidly that I'd, changed him to a her. And he was like, great, this is your novel. You do whatever you want with it. So that was quite important for me to have that. Black Butterflies, the title comes from what people in Sarajevo called the fluttering, burnt pages of books that blackened the skies for days after this catastrophic fire in the National Library that also burnt down my great uncle's studio. And obviously, there's something very poetic about this, calling them black butterflies, but also something very horrific in the image of art and books. The burnt remains of them blackening the sky and falling down, catching in people's hair and clothes for days afterwards. And in the book, Zora becomes quite, it starts really haunting her, this image of the black butterflies.
Do you want to talk about Zora's art for a moment, particularly her work depicting bridges?
Yes. So Zora is a painter of bridges. She's a landscape painter, as I mentioned, but in particular, she loves painting the beautiful, many arched Ottoman bridges that cross Bosnia's rivers. So she became famed for this throughout Bosnia and Yugoslavia. She was called the painter of bridges. And most of her studio in the Old Town Hall is given over to these oil paintings of bridges. Zora's heyday was during the Winter Olympics when people from all over the world came to Sarajevo and bought her art. And in particular, they loved the Ottoman bridges because for them, there's something about the bridge that symbolizes the union of East and West that Sarajevo represents to the world. Zora is quite interesting about that because she actually says for her, it's not about symbolism. It's about the form. She just loves the form of the bridge meeting its reflection in the water. But of course, there is bound up in this image of the bridge the suggestion of union, connection, and also of resistance to war.
There was a point in the book that I highlighted. Zora Kochevich, the painter of bridges, has died. But the thing is, she didn't die. No, she went on just as everyone goes on. There are no beginnings and no endings, just war. thought that was beautiful. So you did mention earlier the people who Zora lives with in this block. And so, like, there was 7-year-old Una, who lives in the same building, is almost a lifeline to Zora. She reminds her of her daughter. She also inspires her to tap into her artistic skills despite the lack of resources and danger outside their apartments. And she's just one person in Zora's community that forms as the danger outside the building grows. Can you talk a little bit more about this community?
Yes. So Zora lives in a tower block. It's a sort of typical communist era tower block that was built during Tito's years on the outskirts of Sarajevo. And this block is very mixed. It's full of people of all ethno-nationalities. So next to her, as we said, we've got directly next to her is Mirsad, who is Bosnian Muslim bookseller. I won't say too much more about what's going on there. I don't want to give too much of the plot away. But so we've got him there. We've got opposite her, Anto and Milka, who are Bosnian Serb and Bosnian Croat, who work. Anto is an actor in the youth theatre in Sarajevo, and their daughter, Una. So Una is a 7-year-old girl, as you said, who Zora starts teaching how to paint, basically to occupy the time. And when they run out of paint materials and canvases, they start painting on the walls of the flats. And she's a wonderful little girl, inspired by a girl called Anna, who, when I went out to research this novel, I lived for 5 months in Sarajevo after the war to interview people about their experience of living through the war. And actually, Anna was my grandparents' neighbor's daughter, who was 7 at the time when the war happened, but she was 26 when I went out there. We spent a lot of time together, and she told me a lot of her memories of what it was like to be a little girl stuck, you know, your childhood, 4 years taken up in these warlike conditions. And so quite a few of her stories and memories have made their way into this book. And then down below in the flat, you have Vesna and Drago and Lenka, who are all Bosnian Serbs. And Lenka also isn't based on a real life person who was an interpreter during the war, based out at the airport for the French officers in the UN peacekeeping effort. And finally, there's also Almasa and Osman, who are Bosniaks, who live next to Vesna and Drago and Lenka downstairs. And they are a little bit more peripheral, but partly because they're working all the time. Osman is a surgeon, and Almasa, when her 3 sons, they all race off to sign up to fight to defend their city, literally at the beginning of April when the war starts. And so because she doesn't want to be home alone, she goes and works as a nurse alongside her husband in the nearby hospital.
Let's talk about point of view for a bit. And I'm really bad at identifying this, so tell me if I'm wrong. The majority of the book is told in third person limited.
Yes.
But then you were able to bring in first person limited through Zora's letter to family that she writes and is never able to send. What does this change in perspective allow you to do as a writer?
It gives us immediate access to Zora's voice at key emotional points in the narrative. And also, it's a structure that, as you said, these letters she can never send to her husband. So she's writing to her husband, but she can't send them because the head post office was blown up earlier in the war and post can't be delivered. So she puts them in a drawer to send. They're her way of connecting herself with her husband, trying to imagine his presence in the room because she's missing him incredibly. He's in England. And it's also a way to underline for the reader how cut off she is because she can't send these and how much she misses her husband.
I'm sure this is not what you intended, but indulge me for just a moment.
Sure.
I wrote a paper on James Joyce's The Dead in school. And one of the points I focused on was the meaning behind the names he chose. For example, Mr. Brown, when translated to Irish, Brown becomes Dawn, and Dawn, the brown one or the dark one is also the name of the Irish god of the dead. And if you superimpose the Irish meaning over this conversation between Aunt Kate and Mary Jane in the dead, close the door, somebody, Mrs. Mullins will get her death of cold. Brown is out there, Aunt Kate, said Mary Jane. Brown is everywhere, said Aunt Kate. It sounds very much like this conversation between Mirsad and Zora in Black Butterflies. There is only death here, Mirsad said last night. There's death everywhere, Zora replied. And it captured my attention because the title of my paper was Death is Everywhere. And I don't have a question, but I guess only comment on it if there's something there.
Well, I find that fascinating. Can I just say you are picking out all my favourite parts, which is wonderful. And you know what? That was, I mean, this is just obviously pure coincidence, but perhaps what you're picking up on is the ring of truth about it, because it was something that my great uncle said to me. He said, and you know, his English wasn't great, so he spoke and it sounded very sort of symbolic. It was like, death is everywhere. But he said when he decided to leave Sarajevo on this last Red Cross convoy, and really he was completely beaten down by this point, 7 or 8 months into the siege, and had lost all his life's work and his studio. It wasn't really a choice. But when he knew he was leaving, he also kind of knew that, just as the quote said, death is everywhere, that you're not escaping death by leaving Sarajevo. You're leaving because you have to and because you can, because he was offered one of these places on the convoy. But he knew that it didn't necessarily mean that life would be all okay over in England. And in fact, of course, it wasn't. Death is everywhere. And he, of course, carried the war with him. You can't just leave a place and have a happy ending, of course. I think this is something that perhaps he said to me, and it really stuck with me, death is everywhere, which was maybe his thoughts on having got to the UK and having done well and painted and integrated, but still death is everywhere. You can't escape it. He couldn't escape the war. Both him and his wife would really sort of get very emotional, unsurprisingly, and not be able to talk about certain things when I carried out my initial interviews with them. And it was very interesting because they could talk quite freely about the very first moments of the war and leaving, but they found it very difficult to actually talk about their 7 months under siege and under attack. And I think probably they'd blocked it a bit. And this was part of the reason that I decided to go to Sarajevo to talk to people who had lived through the siege. Interestingly, people who remained in Sarajevo were kind of able to access their memories more. And that might be to do with the fact that they talked about it a lot with people around them. You know, there wasn't such a before and after moment in their lives.
Regarding your great uncle, when fiction is based on real life like this, especially something so horrific as war, does writing something like this impact how you relate to your own family?
Yes, and possibly how they relate to their history as well. It's not just to do with me. I didn't have any issues with my family. They've read it and they love it and they're very proud of it. Unfortunately, my great uncle and his wife died before Black Butterflies came out. So they haven't read it, although they did read earlier drafts of it when it was quite different. Their daughter, she loves it, but I often wonder, it must be quite tricky for her because, of course, it's so closely based on her father's story, and yet it is very heavily fictionalized. So that's interesting. But they've done nothing but help and, you know, provide so much for me to do with this story of Black Butterflies. I think my sisters, my two younger sisters, have probably learned stuff from it, of course, because I did a huge amount of research. This took a long time to write. It took 13 years and it really involved a lot of research. It's quite a politically sensitive topic still, There's still Bosnia is not a happy country. The divides run deep, and there are very different versions and understandings and narratives surrounding the war. It's very important to me to be, even though I'm writing fiction, adhere to the facts of the timeline of the siege and what happened when as closely as I could. And I was learning as I wrote it, and I'm still learning. You never stop that process. And I think certainly my sister's learned a lot about what happened from it. My mother also possibly, interestingly, she's of course from Sarajevo, but she wasn't there during the war, so she also learned stuff from it.
Well, I learned so much because, the siege of Sarajevo and the Bosnian War took place not that long ago, which is astonishing. I felt as I was reading, sometimes I thought I was reading about World War II in parts, but then a Sony Walkman would snap me back to the reality that this was set in 1992, that this happened in 1992, a little more than 30 years ago. And the suffering and atrocities of war, whether it's 1942, 1992, or what we see in the news in 2024, it's difficult to fathom. So, when it comes to telling the story of living during a war, what can fiction accomplish that journalism cannot?
A lot, I think. The main thing really is that we enter the characters, the key protagonist here being Zora, but also the other characters of Mirsad and Una, and we start to really care for them. We really start seeing and experiencing and feeling the war through their eyes and senses, hearts and minds. And that's a very different experience to reading the more factual summaries of war from a journalistic point of view. Unfortunately, in the world at the moment, there is so much war going on, and it's actually increased. Because I looked this up the other day, there is more war going on at the moment than before. It started increasing about 10 years ago, and one in six people at the moment are affected by war. It's on the news everywhere, it's in our social media, and you can start to develop a sense of just not being able to cope with it and switching off a bit to protect your emotions and your mental health. And I think fiction can allow us to really take a long, deep dive into a particular time period or war with characters and spend time with them. And really experience it on a deep level without switching off. As we've been talking, we've got the power of art threading through Black Butterflies. So this, and also the growing friendships and love between Zora and her neighbours. So this allows us a thread to hold on to see and experience the more harrowing moments and to experience it with open hearts and minds. And I think that's the power of fiction.
What do you hope readers will take away from this book?
I hope they will open their hearts to refugees, war refugees, displaced people, and immigrants in general, and come away with a deeper understanding and empathy and the ability to put themselves in the shoes of others, which on the outside, just to recount this story, when my great uncle and aunt arrived in Heathrow, finally, after escaping the siege of Sarajevo, their daughter said she was so shocked by what they looked like. Her mother had lost most of her teeth, her hair had grown out. She used to have dyed hair, and all the dye had grown out like 2 stone lighter, both of them. And they looked like sort of images for a second of, what you see on TV of war refugees. And then it's like, no, they were her parents. And there's this flipping moment and the joy. And they are, of course, her parents. And I hope something of that transformation can happen when people read Black Butterflies. I also very much hope that when people read it, it has got, as well as artist resistance as a theme running through it, as we've been saying, it's very much a love letter to the multicultural society that Sarajevo was in the 1990s and before. And, I hope it also allows readers to see beyond differences of race, ethnicity, different cultures, and to just see people, your neighbors, for who they are.
Well, the book is Black Butterflies. Priscilla Morris, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
That was Priscilla Morris, author of the book Black Butterflies, which was published by Knopf. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.